We're good. We are in Romans chapter 12. And as we said last week, chapters 12 through 16 are basically Paul telling us how a Christian life is to be lived. And chapter 12, verses 3 through 13, he's talking to how the Christian as a brother. And so that's kind of the focus of these verses. We got down through about verse 5 and ready to go on to 6 through 13, I think. And in verses 4 through 5, he discusses an intimate relationship and uses the analogy of the body and all the different parts. And that is intimate. I mean, it has to be, because everything has to work together. And all of us pretty much in this room are older. And so we may have some things that don't work as well as they used to. We don't like that. It's not good. It's not fun. You know, whether it's a back or a knee or eyes or ears or what have you, you know, or if you've, you know, been unfortunate to lose part of your body, a limb or something, I mean, it takes a toll on you. And so he goes into that analogy about the body. And then in verses 6 through 8, he talks about the gifts that God has given us. Okay? It says, and since we have gifts that all differ according to the grace given to us, let each exercise them accordingly. If prophecy, according to the proportion of his faith, if service in serving, or he who teaches in his teaching, or he who exhorts in his exhortation, he who gives with liberality, he who leads with diligence, and he who shows mercy with cheerfulness. Is Paul's list all-inclusive, do you think? Or is it generic enough, general enough to cover pretty much our whole sort of life?
It covers a wide range.
Okay. I mean, you could maybe point out some smaller things, you know, that, you know, a person is good at and decides to do. Is it presumptuous on Paul's part to think that we have these gifts? Is he saying we should have all of them?
Not everyone has the same, but if we exercise what we have, that's sufficient
God. Okay. Okay. I agree with you. What is that predicated upon, Jack? Well, more general than that, more specific to that discussion of gifts and exercising them. Okay. Okay. But we need to look, Joel. Okay, all right. But it's predicated upon the fact that we got to recognize what our talents are, right? You know, Art's a great song leader, like I said last week. I'd sound like a big old bellowing hog if I was up here trying to lead singing. You know, that's not my talent. I recognize that. But, you know, each one of us need to look inwardly and go, okay, what has God given me that I can do? And if you just take this list right here, that's a good place to start, Art.
But we also need to recognize that all collectively we cover the gamut of things. You know, there are things that for instance, well, there are things my wife is a lot better at than I am, obviously. There are things that other ladies are better at than she is. But you don't just, you have to consider the whole body that way and
okay, all right. Yes, sir?
The thing you've got to caution yourself against, too, it's like the parable that Christ gives of the talents. That you don't bury the talent that you do have. You utilize whatever it is you have in your ability.
Okay. And what happened in that parable? What was the end result?
We're condemned to hell.
No, on the good side. What was the end?
The talents were given.
Okay. Thank you. That's where I was trying to get to. So, you know, if I look at this list and go, okay, well, this is my talent. That's what God's given me. And so that's what I'm going to do. And I stop right there. Is scripture as a whole, based upon that parable and that lesson learned there, are we to just stop and that's all we're going to do? All right. No. No.
Well, how did you get to where you're at now?
Blind luck, I guess. I don't know.
No, you made an effort to try to improve and get to some things, did you not? That's one of the things we're trying to develop with this 20s and 30s class over here. We want those folks to start developing their talents and using their talents in the congregation, because all of us are not going to be around here for another 20, 30 years.
Right. Very good. Bob?
Kenny, obviously it's important to get out of your comfort zone. It's easy to do the things that are easy.
Right.
But in order to improve, you have to try harder and do something that you're not necessarily all that comfortable with.
Well, I think, here's my thoughts, okay? I think it's incumbent upon the elders and quite possibly the deacons as well to ask people to get outside their comfort zone, okay? To ask them to do things that they've never done, not as a method of trying to embarrass anyone. I mean, certainly, you know, if you really felt strongly that you couldn't do something, fine and dandy, but I think as a way of learning, that's what we have to do, is get out of that comfort zone. And I think they ought to be looking for opportunities like that. And I think that's what Art is kind of referring to with this class, to get those guys and ladies as well. It's not just the guys to start learning to get out of that comfort zone and do it more. Okay. Anyone else? And again, I think if you go back to verse 3, all this is predicated upon that, where he talks about we ought to be thinking and using sound judgment. Okay. So if we stop thinking, if we stop using sound judgment, we're not ever going to get to these other things. Okay. Verses 9 through 13. Will someone read those verses, please?
Let love be without hypocrisy, abhor what is evil, cling to what is good. Be kindly affectionate to one another with brotherly love, and honor give preference to one another. Not lagging in diligence, fervent spirit, serving the Lord, rejoicing in hope, patience, and tribulation. Continuing steadfastly in prayer, distributing to the needs of the saints, giving the hospitality.
Okay, thank you. What's Paul trying to say here? What's the bigger thought behind these verses, do you think?
Be Christ-like.
Okay. He said, be Christ-like. All right. I think Paul's trying to say, we've been given grace, right? We need to be giving grace back. And this is how you go about it. Okay? Is love hypocritical? No, not real love. Okay. If we're to be good versus not being good or evil. The gift of grace affects our context as well, the people that we come in contact with. How many people did you work with in your lives that you just tried to avoid? Okay? Because they were always negative or whining or griping. You know, you just didn't really like to be around them. How did you, when you had to come in contact with that person, how did you deal with them? Very carefully. Okay.
Walk on eggshells.
Okay. Is there another way to deal with those people?
Try to be upbeat yourself.
Okay. And so if we do that all the time, right. I mean, there's going to be times when we're not, you know. But if we try and be that way pretty much all the time, you know, we can make a difference in those people's lives. You know, just what we always talk about, you know, we're showing them that we're Christians because we're acting in that way. Okay? And we do that by putting others ahead of ourselves. Okay? Not to where it's detrimental to us, but to where it's a benefit to them. Okay? And then in verse 11, the gift of grace affects our conduct, okay? Not lacking in diligence is outward looking, okay? Fervent in spirit is inward looking, and then serving the Lord is upward looking, okay? So it affects our conduct, our thoughts. All right. Verse 12, the gift of grace affects our convictions. All right. What does he say here in verse 12 that we should be? Okay. He says we're to be praising and patient and prayerful is what he's saying. Okay. So if we're praising, if our life is praising God, if we're patient with others, if we're prayerful, okay, it's going to affect ourselves, our convictions about life.
A very zealous Christian. That's what a very zealous Christian.
Okay. All right. It's a good point, Millis. I mean, a lot of times we consider zealousness as, you know, the gung-ho, in-your-face type guy, but it's probably a little bit more reserved. Joel?
You know, this visit, I think actually from 9 within the chapter, it's not a buffet where you go through and pick out the ones that I can do this. You know, this is to be a Christian, you know? And I think that I myself, I even post this somewhere where I sit every day.
It is, yeah. It's a good refrigerator list, right? You know, or wherever you... Right, I mean, it's like a puzzle, right? I mean, this Christian life is like a puzzle, and he's laying out all the pieces here. It's, you know, and says, you know, you need to take these and put them into the puzzle and once you, you know, you may not be able to get all the puzzle complete, but you need to keep working at it. He also talks in verse 12 about hope. In both the Jew and the Gentile and us, I mean, we both have to have hope in the promises of God. Okay, David talked about that a week or two ago on Sunday morning about man needs hope. He needs hope not only in his secular life, but he needs hope in his spiritual life, that there's something better beyond this. And the Christian recognizes that this comes from God. It can't come from anywhere else, because nothing else can do anything for us. And then verse 13, the gift of grace affects our concern, contributing to the needs of the saints and practicing hospitality. And you can go back to Matthew chapter 25, verses 35 through 40, you know, where Jesus talks about, you know, those who did things in his name. And those are the people that are going to inherit eternal life. You know, taking care of the sick and the poor and the naked and imprisoned and all those sort of things. Okay. So it's nothing new here. Paul's just redistributing the thought in this verse here. The verses 14 through 16 deal with the Christian's social life. Will somebody read those three verses, please? Okay, thank you, Jack. Verse 14, bless those who persecute you, bless and curse not. All right, again, back to those individuals that we've worked with or come in contact with in life that, you know, maybe aren't so Christian or just, you know, opposed to it. All right. We can disarm those sort of people with this sort of attitude, okay? And it works very well. It's just hard to do sometimes, okay? What does it mean here to bless? To bless those who persecute you. It means to make them feel special, okay? Means to make them feel special. So if we bless them in making them feel special somehow, it gets rid of that wall of adversity. It breaks down that barrier. Hard to do sometimes, but that's what it does. Verse 15, Paul talks about the challenge of discovering opportunity. Okay. What happens when we act in these ways? When we rejoice with those who rejoice and weep with those who weep. It's easy to do in here, isn't it? I mean, we do that pretty well, but what about outside here? What do you think, if you did that, what do you think that would do? What do you think that would do to the non-Christian?
I wonder where that source of energy or that source of attitude is coming from, I think.
Okay.
Kind of contagious.
Okay. Can break some barriers down. Okay. If people think that you have a genuine concern for them, if you're showing the love and grace of God through, you know, those intimate times of joy and sorrow, okay, they can break some barriers down and let them see something else. Verse 16, he talks about don't be partial and don't be proud. Okay. Be the same mind towards one another. Do not be haughty in mind, but associate with the lowly. Do not be wise in your own estimation. So, do we act partially towards others sometimes? Yeah. Okay. What happens when we act in these ways? Being partial or looking down on others.
You lose all your influence.
Okay.
You turn them to Christ.
All right.
And they're not seeing Christ in
you. All right. It builds the barriers back up, right? You know, you're supposed to be a Christian. Yeah, you know, I don't think that's a very Christian attitude. Tom? Mm-hmm.
I mean, they actually talk to me.
Right.
And I appreciate it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they put their pants on just like you do, right? The whole saying, yeah.
We read in James chapter 2, verse 9, but if we have respect to person, you commit sin and are convicted of the law as transgressors.
Okay. Did Jesus act with partiality? I mean, was a Jewish man supposed to be talking to a woman of ill repute, you know, at the well? No. Mm-mm. I mean, he did a lot of things that went past those typical societal borders that we establish, aren't. Right.
He passed it out across the board.
Right. Which says, what about God's grace? It's for everybody, right? Okay. Does someone else have their hand up? Okay. You can also look at Nicodemus. The partiality that with Jesus, he displayed it to the dying thief when he was on the cross. Okay, he didn't have to. I mean, normally we would not recognize a person like that. He's on the cross and he decides to, you know, he has the forethought in mind, seeing his mother standing there, that he wants to take care of her. And so he asks the disciple to take her in and treat her like his own mother. Okay. How about Judas? I mean, he dealt with him, or God dealt with him, but, you know, he could have stopped him. Of course, that wasn't God's plan, and he knew that, but he allowed him to do what he needed to do or wanted to do.
Well, apparently, before that betrayal night, James was treated the same as all the other disciples.
Right.
We don't see any indication. I don't recall any indication where Jesus treated him differently.
Right. And then if you look at the pride of Jesus, you know, where he was born, how he was raised, okay, his wealth. You know, he didn't even have a home to call his own. Okay. The respect from Israel, you know, when they say nothing good comes out of Nazareth. Even when he looks at himself and his own ability as the Son of God, but he says in John 5, he can't do anything on his own. He's getting this from his Father. Okay, so there was no pride in Jesus' life as well. And Paul's just trying to draw our attention to all these things so that, you know, it's easy for us to get proud of our accomplishments sometimes, right? And act these ways. I mean, even within here. Paul's warning us not to do that. Okay. Verses 17 through 21. Will someone read those? Thank you. So Paul lays out some methods here of life that we can use. Okay. Verse 17. All right. He tells us that we need to live passively. We need to live peerlessly. Okay. Never pay back evil for evil and respect what is right. Verse 18. He tells us that we need to live peacefully. Okay. And then in verses 19 through 21, he tells us we need to live positively. Okay. Yes, sir.
You said in verse 17 that we live passively.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't think he's trying to say be a doormat, okay? But
I understand you pay no one evil for evil and have regard for good things in the sight of all men. That doesn't seem passive.
Okay. Well, you're not, I guess what he's trying to get across is you're, you know, when you, you don't react. I mean, if someone's going to treat you evilly, we shouldn't be responding back in like. And I guess that's the point, you know. Maybe it's the wrong word to use, but I that's kind of a concept. Joel? Right.
You know, if someone comes in to this building, might they have other places to start shooting? I don't think we just want to sit there and let everybody be shot because we're not going to react to aggression.
Right. We might try and stop him here, but we're not going to, following the event, we're not going to go back out and hunt him down and kill him. Okay, that would be returning evil for evil. Millis, were you going to say something? Right. And he says in verse 19, never take your own revenge, because that's God's place, right? All right. But if your enemy is hungry, feed him; thirsty, give him drink. All right. Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. And that's kind of the opposite of the passively part, is there's ways to live positively in this life. And I think Paul's trying to draw attention to that. Okay.
Mm-hmm. And verses 9-21, it just says behave like a Christian.
Okay. All right. Yes, ma'am. And so look at the life of Christ. I mean, if anyone would have ever had in our minds the right to strike back for what all the injustices that had been done to him, you know, but he never did do that. So he lived passively in that sense and not striking back, but he also lived positively in what his mission was. Okay. So, well, but yeah, but he wasn't argumentative. He always came back with truth, and it all was based upon God's desires for us and his will. Right. I mean, think about Christ's first part of his life, where he starts this journey and he goes into the desert for 40 days and doesn't eat. And then Satan comes along to tempt him and says, here, take this rock and turn it into bread and you can have something to eat. Whew. If he'd have put a tub of butter there, I'd have probably done it. Okay? You know, the lunch ladies at Litton Junior High School made yeast rolls every day, and you could get two for a nickel. I always had a nickel. And I always had some yeast rolls, and they were hot, and they weren't like going to Old Charlie's and getting some half-baked bread. You know, they were done. You know, but here he is being tempted by Satan, and he used the words of God to respond back. Now, he probably could have zapped the devil just as well, but that would have been taking vengeance, and vengeance wasn't his job. That's God's, and he'll take care of that in due time. Bob? I think it's saying that you need to look for opportunities to do good to those that are hurting or doing bad to you to change their attitude. I don't think it's relegated just to hunger and thirst. I think it has to do with searing the conscience.
Okay.
you know, to make me realize I've been doing bad and that's wrong and I need to stop.
I found, you know, there's a lot of references to coals of fire in Ezekiel. In Ezekiel 24:11, it says, heat on the wood kindles, I'm sorry, then set the pot heat be on the coals, that it may become hot and its bronze may burn, that its filthiness may be melted in it, that its scum may be consumed.
Okay.
And I think that's probably what he's saying here would happen if you feed your enemy that's hungry. You know, it actually just burns away his attitude towards you, you know, the hateful attitude.
Okay. Good point. I mean, in Millis. Okay. Yes, sir. Yeah, I mean, it's in line with that teaching. It has to be, you know, or there's something wrong. Tom?
Well, I have to say something about don't recall if someone smites you on the cheek, you should turn down the cheek. And I certainly agree with that. I hope that I would have the presence and forethought to do that. However, if someone physically tries to do you or your family or somebody brings bodily harm, I do not believe that we are required to stand by and let it happen. That's my opinion. I would.
Okay. Okay. And we don't want to get smacked by you. And maybe it's just saying there's nothing against protection, okay? Or if there was a need to slay an animal, you know, for food, you know, I don't know. Hold on, Millis. Yes, sir. Right. Okay. Whoa, oh, come on. Ashley. Well, the Smith girls are back again, so everybody have a safe holiday and safe travel if you're going out of the city or even in the city. It's pretty hairy out there. All right, thank you.